from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the GoodAtheist.net podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Krista Hendricks.
Here's the crazy thing. Over the past few days since we did the whole Atheist Appreciation Month and restarted the Bible Stories podcast too, there's just been a lot of renewed interests in the site, so much so, and the podcast in particular, so much so, there was one day where there was a ridiculous amount of downloads. I thought it was going to completely crash the site. It was nuts. Like, there was almost 10,000 in one day.
Wow.
Of downloads of a podcast. Or multiple podcasts, because I guess we have some new listeners now. So we'd like to say hello to many of you new listeners.
Hi.
Hello. You have a lot of content to go through, by the way. If you're just finding yourself to just be a new fan, you're like, I wonder how entertaining it goes back. Pretty far. Not all the way to the beginning, though.
That's my favorite thing to do. Absolutely. When I find a new person I like, especially in YouTube, I'm really bad for that. When I first found, you know, you find somebody and then you go back and watch the 380 videos they've made over the last 4 years, and it takes you...
It's delightful when you find someone new.
Yeah.
They have all this kind of crazy content. You're like, why was I not aware of you before?
Mm-hmm.
But in a way, it's good, you know?
It's great, because it gives you hope. Because every once in a while I get to this point where I'm like, has everybody who will ever interest me, have I discovered them already? And then I find something new. No! There's always new things. Yay!
There's always new things. It's just sometimes it is difficult to find that stuff.
Yeah.
And you realize doing this stuff on the internet, how everyone is kind of fragmented in weird little worlds. You know, like there's a group of people that have only ever interacted with The Good Atheist on iTunes. They've never gone to the site, never gone on Facebook, on Twitter, on Google Plus, or any of the other ways that we tried to spread.
Are you doing Google Plus?
Slowly.
Ooh, that's commitment.
Well, I get, you know what, I complain about all these different little networks, but hopefully they're going to come in handy in the next couple of days. As many of you know, or perhaps some of you who are new don't know, in a couple of days, launching the Kickstarter account for the Bible Stories book, and there has been so much positive response from people who are just really excited, and just great positive feedback too from the shows as well. Now, and the shows themselves are just a preview. You know, whenever you listen to a Bible story, this is a preview. I haven't really worked out, refined the jokes. They're just still kind of rough, just coming out of my mouth for the first time. So if you think that's hilarious, I think it's only going to get better. With that said, the reason why things have been a little bit delayed is, I got to tell you, I'm having some difficulty finishing my face. It's the hardest thing to draw is your own face.
Your face on the cover.
Your face on the cover, because the whole idea is me in a recreation of Gustave Doré's Jacob Wrestles the Angel, and except for positions are reversed, I'm winning, and it's my face.
Well, I find you keep making your lips really pouty. I don't know what that's
about.
I've
reduced the poutiness by at least 10%.
Because every drawing you've done so far, I've noticed that's like, usually each one you tweak it, it's getting a little bit better, but the consistent thing is you've always got this pouty model mouth.
I got to accept the fact that I'm still not going to be happy with it for a little while, and that's just got to be okay. Because what's that famous quote, art is never finished, it's just abandoned, and it just has to be done, and in some very tragic ways, I'm a perfectionist. Combine that with procrastination, and it's a recipe for disaster. So, I have to kick my own ass and finally do that. And the other reason, too, there's been a slight delay is, unfortunately, technology is not at our disposal right now. It's a big frustrating thing about having sold most of our belongings. Is that something as simple as a scanner, you take that for granted, and all of a sudden you're just like, shit,
yeah.
I gotta scan stuff, and I do not have that ability.
I feel like such a moocher, too, because we've been going over to friends' houses, and, hey, can you print this for me? Can you fax this scan, please?
Stupid.
Ugh, useless. Hey, I just wanted to mention, do you know who said art is never finished, only abandoned?
Who said that?
Guess.
I don't know, Pablo Picasso.
No, Leonardo da Vinci. That's who attributed to saying that.
Oh, wow.
That makes me like that quote a little bit more.
Way more.
We both have a passion for da Vinci in our own way.
Well, you know, if you'll indulge me, I'd love to tell the story of actually why I have a crush on Leonardo da Vinci.
Yeah, I think it would be a great story.
It's a neat little origin story about me. See, I don't have a lot of memories of when I was younger. And it's not because something tragic happened. It's just because, I don't know, for some weird reason, I have much more of attachment to facts than I do to time, places, and events. I live in my own brain. What can I say? Anyways, because of that, there's so many memories that are just essentially non-existent. But I've been able to kind of recreate my past, if you will, based on, obviously, the testimony of others. And one of the fascinating things, apparently, is that I used to be obsessed when I was about 10 years old with Leonardo da Vinci. And I had found a book, a tattered book that was missing pages, all about that man. Now, if you kind of know more about me, if you've listened to the show quite a bit of time, you know that I have this bit of an obsession with being a Renaissance man. And of course, if you wanted to find what is the origin of this, well, the only poster that I had was one of Leonardo da Vinci. That was my only poster, okay? No action heroes or whatever. I mean, I love comic books to death, don't get me wrong, but Leonardo da Vinci was my man, and that's who I wanted to beat, you know? I wanted to be even better than that guy. Because I had this obsession when I was a kid. I'm like, I want to be a super genius. That's what I wanted. And I figured that the best way to do it was to take the biggest genius you'd ever, you know, could ever see or hear about, and then try to beat him. Then you know you were smart. So, I mean, that's the benchmark. Leonardo da Vinci, that was my benchmark, I felt. Like, I mean, sure, there's tons of other geniuses, but they never felt like they had it all figured out. You know, like, at least for his time, Leonardo da Vinci seemed like a master of every discipline. It was just impressive.
Yeah.
And every time you hear about something new or that he did, and you're just like, really, Leonardo da Vinci did that? Fuck. You're just like, the submarine, really? Yeah. Airplane designs, what the hell?
I think my attraction to da Vinci was always that I felt like he was a man that was in a position to pursue his passions at a whim, which is kind of what my dream is. My dream is that to be in a situation in my life where tomorrow morning I wake up and go, hey, I want to make a feature film, and then just do that. You know, anything, just any little thing. Just, oh, I want to learn Japanese this month, and just do it. I always felt like da Vinci was in a situation where, yes, he was really smart. But it also felt like, when I was reading about his life, that anytime he wanted to do something, he just did it. And I don't necessarily feel like that's always an opportunity we are all afforded.
Well, he was definitely very lucky. And considering how lazy he was, apparently a big, giant procrastinator.
Dude, that is also why I loved him. How can somebody so genius and brilliant be also so lazy? And I'm kind of that way, too, where when I'm getting shit done, I am getting shit done. But when I'm lazy, wow.
So lazy.
I don't eat. Like, I haven't even gotten dressed today. I'm still not dressed. And I don't plan to be dressed until I will put clothes on 5 seconds before we leave today to go for dinner. I'm so lazy. If I can be lazy, I'm just lazy. I love it. Indulgently lazy. It's nice.
That one's for the boys to visualize in their brains.
Oh, then I'm not.
Yeah. It's great, no. I love your honesty. Oops. It's necessary.
I do a lot of
this. It's the radio. You can do whatever you want. Look, I'm in an embarrassing combination of jogging pants, track pants. They don't quite fit right. Every time I bend over, you see my ass crack. I don't like that, but I've had these pants for a very long time. They're actually, hilariously enough, my sister Carolyn's track pants back when she was a tomboy, all sporty. And apparently they still kind of quasi fit. I just don't know if I want to buy track pants. Track pants.
I think it's important for everybody to have a pair of, like, a really good workout outfit.
You know?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe for me it works because
I do. I have those really horrible purple shorts that I like to go in. Everybody leaves me alone when I work out in those. Yeah. I don't think that anybody should work out in attractive clothing. I think that's just good.
I like that. I like wearing clothes that make me feel like an athlete. I feel like I'll push myself further. Because I have to live up to the way I look.
Totally the opposite way I feel. I feel like I need to dress foolishly and look heinous and ugly and horrid so that I feel more compelled to do something about it. where you're just like, I don't know if I want to lift up that last weight. You big fat ass.
I feel like we're on a tangent of a tangent of a tangent.
Oh, yeah. It's a very tangenty show. I want to let everybody know, by the way,
this is a tangent show,
that one of the reasons why this is a bit of a tangy all over the place show is that, unfortunately, my guest that was supposed to be there for Atheist Appreciation Month, Austin Klein, we weren't able to arrange the meeting time, and his time is extremely tight. I was hoping to do it this Sunday, but you know, like with anything on a weekend where the person doesn't have a lot of time, you know. Hey, we managed to do two in a row without fucking up. I think that in my book, that's a pretty high percentage. I'm going to take that one and say, well, we've got one booked. We got Guy P. Harrison booked next week for sure. He's written a number of books, and we're going to be doing. I'm going to be talking about him a lot more in the coming shows. Apparently, he does a great interview, so that's going to probably be a fun show.
I've been really enjoying your interviews, and not just because it means that I don't have to do the show.
But mostly.
No, actually, you know what? I'm enjoying doing these shows more and more. I think I used to be way more nervous because I felt that everybody hated me. And now, so I think a lot of me not wanting to do the show is just,
I don't want to be hated.
Hate me so much. Again, my ego can't take it. And now I don't mind it so much. And I also feel more comfortable now. It's less scary. I didn't realize that I was admitting to being naked until I said it. But
whatever,
I don't
mind.
I don't know if, I don't care if they know that I'm naked most of the time when we record these shows. I don't care. I'm naked most of the time when there's not people around. I think everybody is. Isn't everybody?
No.
Who doesn't sit around their house naked?
A lot of people. That's called nudism, you silly Bill.
Nudism?
Yeah.
Nudism?
Yeah, to be a nudist. You never heard of this word?
I've heard nudist, but I haven't heard nudism. Nudism. I'm Googling this.
Nudism. You have a problem with this word here? All right. Why don't you go and ask Google? What does Google say?
I think it's an album. It's like a torrent search. I don't think it's a word.
You don't think nudism is a word? If nudist is a word, nudism is a word.
I can't really find a definition.
All right, well, whatever.
Maybe I'm spelling it wrong.
You're a nudist, okay?
I'm a nudist.
You're a nudist.
Okay. I'm not. I don't want to be naked in public. I just want to be
nudists
naked as much as possible.
Nudists don't necessarily
want
to be naked in public. They're naked in their own homes.
Right. Oh.
I feel like you're just assuming the nudists are people who just go to beaches in France and look at everybody else's, you know, privates.
Yeah, see, that's the part. I don't want to do that. I don't care about other people being naked. My nudism is very, if that's a word, it's very selfish. It's just, I just want to be naked. And actually, I prefer to be naked when other people are clothed, because then there's less pressure. There's not, like, if two people or several people are naked, there's, like, this tension. But if you're just naked, then that's okay, because you're just cool, and everybody's cool with it. It's not a big deal. Like at a photo shoot, and that's fine. No, I like it.
All right, well, whatever. I think we have enough masturbatory aid for the fucking day. Thank you. I would like to introduce the topics
out?
Of the show. No, they're getting the raw.
No.
They're getting the raw stuff. This
Why
is a much
I
more lackadaisical show.
I don't.
Lackadaisical show. Well, whatever. Now it's out
all
there.
All of this.
I regret many things that I've said over the years.
Whatever.
That's what makes good radio, you regret what you've done.
I regret this.
It's like a night out binging, and then all of a sudden, you know, you have all those great stories to tell, but they're only possible due to intense personal humiliation. Let's move on to the first topic of the show after a very lengthy intro that has probably been edited by now. And we're going to be talking about zombies today, because it's been in the news and it's been an obsession with folks, and also its connection, or maybe potential connection, with a soon, I'm sure, to be illegal drug that people are taking.
It's legal?
It is legal.
What?
Yep. I don't even know if I want to mention the site, because there's a website about this product. You could go on and you can order it right fuck now.
I think your listeners are smart enough to not.
Well, we're
going to
have an interesting
zombify themselves.
We're
going
to have a very, very interesting conversation about drugs at the second part of the show, because the first part is to talk about the zombie phenomenon, and the second part is to actually talk about the drug-related aspect, because they're two separate, distinct things that have a common thread that we'll be endlessly talking about and geeking out about.
Okay.
Because
so should we start with zombie phenomena?
Yes, the phenomenon.
Well, I personally can say that, in my opinion, my vision of the zombie growth in terms of this obsession with zombies is reflected in the Calgary Zombie Walk. Because it's been going on for a few years, and at first it was very small, and in recent years, in the last 4 years, it is huge in Calgary, this zombie walk. It's massive.
How many people are you talking about here?
Let me look it up for you. You talk about stuff, I'm going to look it up. Okay, well, apparently, when it started out, I found that there were a bare minimum at least 50 zombies in the first zombie walk in 2000 and... It doesn't say. But it happens on October 15th. Ah, look, Calgary Zombie website. I'm so sorry. I'm really bad at Googling
You're really
things.
Bad at this. You're I'm making me worst. Edit this. I fucking hate you right now. Do this now. Answer my question. I'm not asking you any more questions. I'm going to throw away your fucking laptop is what I'm going to do. That's what I'm going to do. Take this fucking thing away from this woman. Is okay. What my brain is saying.
All right, I'm sorry. I don't know how many there were. But anyway, every year grows. Every year we've got more people. And I don't think it's just because every year more people remember to go. I think that there's been a genuine growth in this obsession with the zombie culture. And that's also reflected in how many movies we see about featuring zombies and stuff like that. And it's interesting to think that zombies are like a relatively new character. Like, sort of like when people think about superheroes, I don't think people really realize, I mean, that's something...
The archetypes are just so fucking old, it's scary.
Yeah, but I also... But, like, superheroes as we know them now are pretty recent. Like, they're pretty recent creations. You know, they're you know, I tend to just imagine personally that everything's always existed. Like, when I think about vampires, I'm like, oh, the first story about vampires must have been written thousands of years ago, and the first story about zombie must have been written thousands of years ago, but that's not true. Right? I mean, this idea of zombies is quite recent, just like the idea of superheroes is quite recent.
Well, the idea in our culture of vampires or of zombies or of similar supernatural entities, they shift with different cultures. I mean, in the medieval ages, they had their kind of own bestiary, if you will, mm-hmm. of things that were just... I'm sure their mythology was just as rich as ours. It's just that some of those elements in the story we just don't really relate to anymore. It has to change, you know. The culture has matured. I will say matured. I will not say differed. I will say matured.
We are better than we used to be.
Just a little bit more adult.
Everything's growing up.
A little
We're
bit more adult.
We're super mature now.
I don't know if it's permanent.
Old is not mature. Anyway, so I mean, I've personally seen, just in Calgary, this growth of the zombie phenomenon. But I also think that people are kind of... It's like the tulip thing in a much more minor sense, where the whole tulip trade, where everybody was like, they liked tulips because other people like tulips. And I do feel like some of the zombie thing is that people are jumping on, you know, we're making movies about zombies and...
You got to be a little bit more specific. I think you got to go back to this tulip thing. Someone's going to be asking, what the fuck is she talking about,
really?
Tulip thing? Yeah.
Okay, well...
Lots of new listeners, baby.
This was the English tulip trade, right? It's England?
I thought it was Dutch.
No, it's Dutch. I'm an idiot. Dutch tulip trade. Uh-oh. What happened was that, basically, tulips became this very prized commodity. And they...
It indicated wealth.
Yeah, it indicated wealth. So people were buying into tulips. They were basically buying into tulip commodities... way more than they were worth. And part of the reason is because there was this disease that was affecting tulips that was making them have these kind of like tiger stripey interesting colors. So they'd be these sickly, weird looking tulips, and people coveted them and they really wanted them before they figured out it was a disease.
That's a really bad thing for them to like.
Yeah. So anyway, so people there was this whole economy that was built around the tulip trade that basically collapsed in on itself.
Uh-oh.
And it's a reflection of...
Economic collapse based on speculation.
Kind of thing,
oh, dear God.
Exactly. That kind of thing happens in our economy all the time. But I think that kind of thing also happens culturally to us. And I think that's kind of happened with the zombie, you know, obsession, where more people liked it because more people liked it. Like, it became kind of kitsch to like it. And with things like the zombie walk and all these movies being created because of this obsession with zombies, the more things that were created because of the obsession, then the more obsession it created, and on and on and on and on and on, until something very interesting happened and the Center for Disease Control decided to capitalize on this obsession with zombies and produce an ad campaign featuring zombie apocalypses.
It sounds brilliant.
Not because they, I mean, the Center for Disease Control has said on numerous occasions that there is no, as far as they know, there's no disease, there's no drug, there's nothing that would exhibit zombie-like symptoms. There's no chance there's ever going to be a zombie apocalypse.
Because it doesn't make sense. Zombies as a monster doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, so basically they're saying there's as far as they know, there's no disease that would reanimate the dead or create zombie-like symptoms. But the reason why they decided to create this ad campaign, as far as I've researched, is that, you know, there was this obsession with zombies. So they were like, hey, people will read this and they'll pick up this comic that we're going to make about it. And the idea is that if you are prepared for a zombie apocalypse, then you'll be prepared for any kind of disease, apocalypse, or things that might inevitably happen. And isn't it responsible of them to get the young people interested? But now, you know, people look at stuff like that and things happen, like the Huffington Post calling the Center for Disease Control and asking them if there was a real zombie epidemic, which is, I mean, that's a little embarrassing for the Huffington Post. I mean, at a certain point, shouldn't they just be like, we don't need to call the Center for Disease Control. Let's all just check in on our reason center and our brain. Oh, wait, this is unreasonable. People coming back from the dead is stupid and impossible, and we don't need to call.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Here's the problem, though. See, when a majority of the population of the United States believes that that rapture is inevitable, people being reanimated from the dead is exactly one of the things that happens. So there is a strong cultural element of zombies that draws from Christianity, at least partially. They had their own form of zombies, although it's not the kind that we have now. It's just that the reanimation of the dead was something that wasn't as big a deal as, let's say, it is now. Now, everybody loves to say, well, Jesus came back, and that's the proof. But then,
zombie Jesus.
But he's not the only one. And in fact, this kind of happens a couple times, right? Where he raises somebody else, Lazarus. So he comes back too. What does that make Lazarus? You know, a demigod by that standard? What the fuck too, right? And all of a sudden, and according to, I think it's Mark, but don't quote me, I'm not in that part of the Bible yet, where there were bodies that came back to life when Jesus is sort of, you know, finally.
Oh, it's creepy.
Yeah, that part sort of like really generally skipped over. Oh, other people came up from the grave. What the fuck happened to them? Did they go ding dong? Hey, honey, I'm back from the dead. Oh, well, that's not unusual. Here's the crazy thing, actually, about that. The reason why it's not unusual, let me give you a good example, the Scottish Wake, is because you would hold a party for 3 days because there was a chance that your buddy who looked dead was actually almost dead drunk, but that given enough time might wake up. And sometimes they used to have contraptions with little bells.
Or
in a coma. Where they had little bells inside coffins because some people had actually managed to bury their way out, come back and be like, guys, I wasn't dead.
Ooh, it's super creepy.
Super fucking creepy indeed. But, you know, there are people, and there are many stories of individuals, even in morgues, that have kind of, like, woken up. They weren't quite dead. You just have to understand that death is not an immediate thing. It's a process. And sometimes that process can be reversed when we think that it can't. We don't really fully understand at what point are you dead? Like, when do we give up on you? When is there still a chance that we might be able to bring this motherfucker back, given our growing technological abilities? What point did you just like, okay, well, we can't keep his neurons firing, so it's over?
Well, I think that it's I actually disagree with you on that. I think that we have a much better understanding. I recently read an article about how it was actually specifically about people saying like, oh, I'm really scared about being buried alive, and there's all these fears, and people like doctors and stuff talking about how, okay, well, we're not like, if your heart stops, are you officially dead? If your brain stops, are you officially dead? And they were talking about how like it doesn't really happen anymore that we declare someone dead and they're not dead.
Well, we have better equipment.
Yeah, so I think I'm concerned about you saying that because it's inaccurate. I mean, we're very good. Our medical establishments are very, very good at telling when somebody is beyond.
Yes, beyond. Burning. Beyond, yes. I'm just saying sort of like at the, and I think that this is the same reason why NDEs, near-death experiences, continue to be a potent way for this group to just sort of say, oh, well, I was dead, and then I had all these visions, right? Where we don't necessarily understand how much energy is really required for the brain to still kind of have a few little impulses, mm-hmm. where it could still kind of be reanimate it.
Well, and for me, I don't actually, like, when people say that to stuff to me, I don't know if it's just a personal pet peeve, but it actually annoys me a little bit when somebody's like, oh, I was dead for 10 minutes, or I was dead for, they were dead, and then they came back. I feel like dead is a state from which there is no returning. So if you came back, quote unquote, then you weren't dead. You should be more specific. You should say, my heart stopped.
You were near death.
Yeah, I had no life signs, and then they were able to help me start my heart again. That doesn't make you dead.
No,
dead
you're not dead.
Dead is an unchanging state for the rest of eternity. You're dead. No more you, period, the end. Except for as in the form of fish food. And I don't know, and I never say anything because those people are like usually talking about something that's very important to them, but I just feel like it's deliberately misleading to say, oh, it was dead and then I was alive again. Because that's not really what happened, in my opinion.
I got to tell you, though, every once in a while, I feel like the story of Frankenstein is perhaps slightly possible, where there is perhaps a stage where we might find that, oh, well, he was way past due. Oh, inject him with a shitload of stem cells and hit him with some electricity, and some weird, frightening shit happens, where he kind of can come back, maybe.
Well, there's
part
actually
of him.
An article on Cracked about, like, the five ways that a zombie apocalypse might actually be real or possible. And one of them was talking about how there is that possibility that stem cells can, you know, correct a lot of stuff that is usually responsible for death. And as a result, it's like, okay, so if we can reanimate dead brain cell tissues,
why can't we just do that in really, really old brain tissue?
Well, not just that, but it's like, if we can reanimate dead brain cell tissue, how do... Is that a zombie? Like, that person... is that technically what we're talking about? Because that's officially, like, the dead walking, thinking, probably a little bit brain damaged even, so similar. Anyway, the Cracked article is pretty interesting. They're also talking about how, like, these whole bio, like, nanobots, if you could have, like, nanobots in the body that are recovering the body and stuff like that, is that can be considered...
Well, there were also stem cells that can regrow bone. A recent article that came out of that. So, in a sense, do you remember that silly scene from Fifth Element where they're just kind of growing her out of stuff?
Yeah.
And you're sort of like, well, maybe that process might be possible. I don't think it would be that fast, but that's for narrative purposes. And all of a sudden,
and the way they did it, too.
Oh, yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's just like, how? Oh, yeah, the UV.
Don't get me started. Don't get
grow,
me started on the bad
grow?
Science.
What? This is the worst science.
Oh, painful.
I think, in my opinion, The Fifth Element is the best movie with the worst science. I think it gets that accreditation. Because there are bad movies with bad science, and then there are good movies with good science. But I don't think there's too many, like, super good movies with super bad science.
I guess it depends on what degree of bad science there is, because mm-hmm. a lot of science fiction is pretty bad science. I mean, look, on a basic level, I'm sorry, I'm going to be shitting on Star Trek for just five minutes, is that watching Star Trek
like
battles
it.
Is watching submarine battles where there's only two fucking dimensions, really.
It's true.
There's just not
it's
a lot
true.
Of dimensions. But
it is really frustrating to watch Star Trek and hear them go, bank left, and it's like, you can move in infinite directions.
He's on starboard. I'm like, I'm sorry, are you talking about 180 degrees of space? Do you know how much space that is? That is half of all space in the universe. It's a lot of space.
I would have appreciated if they took the time to invent another system, you know, where we use the boat system is not effective in space. But neither is the, like, use a 2 o'clock. Because there's an infinite amount of clocks. Because it's not just to your left or to your right. It's also to your top, bottom, sideways, behind you, everywhere.
I have an idea for that, but
it
would be awful, though.
What?
You would have to start with one point, your parallax point, we'll call it P, and then all of a sudden you have three or two other points that are close by that you could use, and then all of a sudden from there you could base your coordinates and tell where anything was, at least that was within ship vicinity. But that's a huge... That's not attractive in a show. That's hard. Even then, I think my math might be all fucked up, because let's just be honest, my math is terrible. But yeah, well, that's a good example of bad science fiction, where you look at their spaceship battles and you realize that these are ships on the sea. Ding, 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 ding. And the way they talk to each other and their uniforms. This is the ocean in space. Well, I got news for you. Space ain't like that at all. All science fiction is just pretty much way off the mark. Way off the mark for the most part. And even, I mean, I don't even want to tell you about the problem with the fact that they're going at impulse speeds. You know, the relativistic consequences of them moving at sub-light speed and how that would just change everything. You're like, no, man, relativity is a powerful fucking beast. It ruins all stories.
Oh, so much.
I don't think you can write a story because of that big, huge-ass fucking problem. And the real reason why, you know, every scientist always tells you the depressing news that if there's life out there, it's never going to make it to us. Ever. You're stuck on this rock, man. Or any other potential rock close by that you have the ability to terraform.
Depressing.
Man.
When I do think about that, I feel awfully trapped. Because, I mean...
You feel trapped?
I do.
Mean, you're tiny. You're
an ant. I know.
Feeling trapped.
I'm not saying it's reasonable.
You're ridiculous.
I'm not saying it's reasonable. But I'm so in love with this idea of space tourism and traveling to other planets and getting to meet other extraterrestrials and all these interesting things, and I love science fiction, and then when the hard reality boom hits me,
yeah.
It's just, you know, I won't even get to see 8.8% of the universe of the world. I mean, there's so much more on this planet for me to explore than is reasonable. But at the same time, it's just like, I'm just so in love with the Star Trek franchise and all of the space travel franchises. It's sad to think that it really is unlikely it's ever going to happen. And let alone in my lifetime, it's never going to happen.
You want to hear depressing. I'll tell you depressing. I've been thinking about how maybe the human race could try to leave imprints in its dying star to become a kind of beacon, if you want, because it's the only thing that's going to be stable enough to send your message for as long as you need it to be sent. Or you're just like, well, like the average white dwarf lasts about a trillion years, and the truth is other galactic civilizations that will pop up, able to read your message, are going to be way outside of your whole time league. I mean, maybe we think 80 years or 100 years is a long fucking time. That's an embarrassing thought, you know? You don't know what deep time is. You have the lifespan of a fucking ant. You really do.
How did we get here from zombie apocalypse?
Well, it's a progression.
This show is so weird.
But let me just tell you, though. Let me continue, because this is
sorry,
a really
I'm
important
sorry.
Part.
I just became
We are
overwhelmed.
So detached from this idea of longevity that we forget how brief our existence is, where you are a ship passing along in a dark night, unable to shed any light to any neighbor, never knowing if your path might cross, where you might even be asleep in that one opportunity that you could, your paths could have crossed, where you could have met. But in that sea of time, when you're set adrift, it's a frightening thing when you consider it, just especially considering your lifespan. That's the thing. That's the rub. So when you wonder, how am I going to communicate with an alien civilization? You got to think in trillions of years, baby. That's what you got to think of. And you got to wonder, how can I manipulate the space around me so that that's my message? My intergalactic fucking beacon is a star. That's what I think is sort of like the future of communicating with alien races. And if we can hide complex information, everything we've ever done in those beacons, and they become our way of transferring information, how awesome would that be? A trillion-year beacon, a testament to your own fucking contribution to the universe that will spread a trillion light years. That is the radius of what you could produce. I think that would be a fine library that you create. And hopefully somebody else picks it up,
well, if you can
does
find
their
a
own
way
thing
to,
too,
well,
and then blammo.
Well, if you can find a way to communicate it in a way that would, like, you know, language would
I don't
be a
want
problem.
To deal with that challenge here, okay? I came up with this idea.
Right, of course.
Can we not put another one on my plate? I feel like that's too much for me now. I don't have the scientific capabilities of doing anything else except for imagine the weirdness of space.
Alrighty.
And that's our impressive. Isolation in that space.
So zombies.
Yes, let's go back to zombies. Here's what I think is probably one of the elements of the zombie culture as we know as we know it. It's resurgence and dips. There's been plenty of times where zombie movies have been big. They've had lulls. Other supernatural entities have taken their places. Werewolves sometimes, vampires. It really depends. And I think each one of them represents different elements of our own psyche. You know, a werewolf is more of an element of our own animal nature that seems to be unchained. We have a problem with it.
I think zombies...
don't know how to deal with it.
Yeah, zombies come from this fear of, you know, we live in very densely populated environments now, and I think everyone's really afraid of this, like, chemical or biological or some kind of epidemic, and this so reflects.
Well, I think also there is something to be said about just the fact that people, you know, I mean, the Greeks feared the mob, and they feared it for a reason. They can be a force to try to create democracy. They can be an undemocratic force as well. You know, mobs don't really have intelligence; they just have drive. And how that drive is concentrated is the one thing where, you know, you always have to be weary of. What drives this? Are the goals noble or are they not? And you know, it'll always try to find line because it is a mob. And I think that that's part of where that fear is. Now, some people actually say that it is also a reflection of our own consumerism and our own appetite, I guess, for destruction, our own obsession, if you will, with death. And with apocalypses, with significant loss of human life. I mean, think about the times in history, like, you know, walk into the shoes of another human being just like you at a time where the Black Plague is taking away a third of everyone you know. Okay, that's just a third. Some of you might be more. Some of you might be everyone because it's just a third distributed to everyone. So it could be just everyone you've ever cared about. You're the only one who's left alive. And you live in that world where just basically a guy ringing a bell has a fucking wheelbarrow that you have to pile your dead upon because there's no way to make all of these people have individual funerals. It's in the pyre and fucking burn the bodies. This is getting crazy. And this is not the first time in our lifetime as a species, as a civilization, to have suffered these kinds of ills. It's natural that we kind of fear those. And for me, zombies reflect infection. You know, the way that we transmit things casually and the way that we become enemies to our own loved ones, how we turn on them, you know, and the way that people deal with zombies. I mean, the campaign is brilliant by the CDC, but think about what is the response to every zombie movie? Kill anyone who's infected. And that's a little bit of a frightening thought when you think about it, because... you know, what if you are put in that situation? That's not a pleasant thing to think about, but that will be your reaction. You know, you may turn on loved ones. You may do something you're not exactly proud of
but
for your own survival.
I think we should also think about, like, I think in a lot of ways this movement is driven by the people who have done a fantastic job of monetizing this passion. So there are things that are...
games, books, movies.
Yeah, those things I don't have so much of a problem with. That's fine. But there's also a lot of people selling legitimate zombie survival kits and legitimate zombie survival courses. The ones that take it with a grain of salt, and I think a lot of them do, the only problem is it's hard to tell which are which. Like, a lot of them are just survival classes, survival training, which I think is, you know, everybody should take a little bit of that. That's very responsible because, you know, we can all end up somewhere we don't expect and... we all tend to have very limited non-modern urban survival skills, so it'd be nice to have some out in the backwoods survival skills. However, a lot of these are all marketed the same way, and in, you know, there's a lot of them that are dead serious, where they, in the classes, they talk about how it's an imminent and real threat, and they talk about, you know, like things that are in horror movies. You know, it'd be like taking an anti-werewolf survival class. It's so ridiculous. And I worry that things like this are fueling this irrational fear and causing people to ask questions like the question of, hey, is this guy eating another guy's face? Is this going to be zombies?
Are we finally about to be overtaken by the zombie apocalypse?
And I am disappointed that we were even asking that question. I think that's unreasonable. Like, can the dead be reanimated? Really? Seriously, guys?
I don't know if you want me
to
tell you some of the statistics about what percentage of people are unsure or refuse to answer the question of whether or not the Earth revolves around the sun.
It's just super frustrating. I mean, when I was doing some research, and I will admit I did limited research for the show, because when you Google zombies, you get distracted real fast. There's just so much weird nonsense fun stuff out there. And one of the things that I watched that made me a little bit... I don't know what I feel about this. I guess this happens for everything. But it was one of those videos where it's just a bunch of news footage scooped together with a soundtrack over it that's ooh-doo, eerie sound, making you feel uncomfortable and nervous and not trusting your government. And basically, like, it starts out by showing that there was, like, some kind of chemical spill in the center of Hollywood, and it was cleaned up, and it's very scary. And then after that, it shows a bunch of newscasts that of stuff that's roughly zombie-esque, and trying to suggest that this, not really saying anything.
Creating panic is what you're saying.
Yeah. Just.
All right, but let me ask you this question. Let's say that we have a problem defining at which point it's just an Orson Welles level of, hey, let's make a radio show about H.G. Wells' fucking War of the Worlds. And then taking that shit
that's
seriously.
That's not intentional, though.
That's not intentional. Our problem is where we do have a problem. We have a hard time differentiating between that group, which can still legitimately create panic. All right? You have to understand that even though we're like, oh, this is okay, we can't say this is harmless. It does create some panic. There will be blowback because people are idiots. An individual is smart. People are still idiots.
Oh, yeah.
And that's an important sentence to remember, because we do have tendencies about us, sheepishness, inability to, or reluctance to accept new or bold ideas. I was thinking to myself, you know what really, where I said that there's a certain percentage of people, and I think it's something along the lines of 6 to 12%, depending on where you are around the world, but it's still a frightening amount of human beings that still think that the sun revolves around the earth. And when you think about it, the real problem is that this is an unintuitive view of the world. And then once you understand that, like, for instance, if I was to say, well, what does the earth revolving around the sun look like? Well, the same thing, really. But the problem is, it's from a very superficial analysis, when you look at it, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference, right? The stars look like they all rotate around us, except for one, you know, which does, well, it does kind of wobble. Polaris does a little bit wobble, but for the most part, it's mostly stable in the northern hemisphere. And they look like they all rotate. And then but when you look at it a little bit further, right, what you see is you see wanderers, or planets, as we call them. And these wanderers behave differently. And then the one motherfucking wanderer that bugged everybody was Mars. That little bitch that wouldn't fucking fall in line with your view. The one where the intuitive perception of the universe was wrong, the ultimate disproof of it. And now it forces you to kind of re-examine your worldview. How long does that take? Well, when did Copernicus write that shit down? Took a while, right? And you don't think that those struggles are emulated everywhere? How long do you think it's going to take for people to just see evolution the same way that we even look at the sun revolving around the earth, where it's even those low numbers? Wow, it's going to take a while, bitches.
You know, honestly, that kind of stuff, you know how we talk sometimes about how Jake avoids telling me certain things, because they hit me on such a personal level. Like, when I realize how many people don't realize that evolution is just, that's just a thing that is, that's just real.
The reason Jacob shelters me.
that makes, I don't want to live anymore. I know that's such a hyper, like, people say that all the time, like, if Obama,
I don't
want to
live on this planet anymore.
I'm going to Mars. Yeah.
Maybe that's why you wish for Star Trek. You want to live on another planet, on another world, where you're just saying, I still think that in 200 years, there's still going to be some people who don't really, who aren't sure whether or not the Earth revolves around the sun. Because like I said, intuitively, you're going to get it wrong. You're going to get so much of the world wrong intuitively that the gargantuan effort to make you into someone who can see through that fog, this is gargantuan, and nobody wants to take on that responsibility no more. And you know, to go back to this whole idea that we just need more education. Oh, we need to climb Mount Everest is what you're telling me. Well, shit. I need to climb Mount Everest. Great. I need to educate the human mind. Let me ask you a question, Carissa, since you love research on the human mind. How does the human mind respond to new ideas?
Reluctantly.
Oh, so reluctantly. So fucking reluctantly. Mm-hmm. It's depressing.
Yes, we also have a natural tendency towards curiosity, which, you know, there's goods and bads. There's goods and bads. And I'm like, this whole zombie thing for me is on one level, it's, I love zombies. I was recently in a little zombie commercial thingy, and it was, well, it was fun to have done it, but I got to be the victim, and I was, had to lie covered in cold, goopy, fake blood on a cold cement floor while people bit me, and it was not fun. And I did not like that part. But, I mean, I was happy to do it because I like this zombie phenomenon. And then, you know, 2 weeks after I do that, this whole bath salts insanity zombies are real thing started happening on the news and in the media. And it made me feel like a jerk because it made me think, am I part of the problem? Did that thing I did, is that part of the problem? Do people really believe in this? And I mean, sometimes I ask myself that about being doing magic, you know, where I've been asked after my show, doing a show, you know, somebody has legitimately come up to me with earnest, a very earnest face. I don't think they were putting me on, and asked, when I disappear, is it scary? And I didn't know what to do. I wanted to quit because I just felt like, am I part of the problem? If, where is the, how do we help these people with their lack of critical thinking that is overwhelming? Just how?
Where do I start? Where do I begin? Well, that's a good question.
How do you help these people? Are zombies real? No, they're not real.
But
oh,
are
my
zombies
God.
any sillier than
oh
most
God.
Of the belief that people have? Where we really, again, like I said, the problem
no,
is that intuitively believing in silly things is kind of easy. Look, let me give you a scenario. You are a poor person living in Europe some few hundred years ago, eating stale bread. And on that bread is a type of mold whose chemicals resemble the effect of LSD. You're an imaginative person. Your mind is filled with stories and lore from hundreds of years of supposed knowledge, and you're tripping balls right now. How are you going to be convinced that all of that wasn't real?
I just feel like we're smarter than that.
Well, this is why I said, you know, at the beginning of the show where I mentioned that we had matured? And this will actually kind of like lead us to the part two of the our talk.
The show is getting so long.
Which is
the... We have to go to dinner.
We're talking... No, we're going to finish this damn show.
Okay.
People are
going to
like it.
All right.
Well, we're going to be talking about drugs right now and talking about one that is in the news and linked to this whole zombie thing. Because there's a new drug in town, kiddos. And this drug has many names, like many drugs. What drug only has one name, right?
We like lingo.
Every drug needs to come out with multiple names because in many senses, this train.
Oh, Mr. Choo Choo, why are you so fucking loud?
So loud. Come on, pass now. You know what that is? That's the sound of poverty. Right there. Horrible, crippling poverty. Come on, pass by train. Mark of commerce. Let's go. I should have closed the window, though. That was my fault.
Yeah. Well, it was hot in here. I don't blame you.
It was a little hot.
That plant has died and been reborn like 8 times. You notice that? I keep killing it and then not killing it. It's
what did you
hot.
Just say about death?
Right. Well...
It wasn't dead.
It wasn't
It had
dead.
A lot of green.
It
was weakened. You were constantly... You know what you are
plant.
Doing? You are just... You're probably ensuring that it's... If it has seeds and plant, like any seeds, we should harness those.
Because it is hardy?
Well, there is some evidence to suggest that even there is a kind of semi-Lamarckian element to evolution, where even the environment will influence its seedlings, which will be more adapt to your
that
abuse of plants.
That makes sense, because if, you know, children who are malnourished pass, when they have babies, they pass on
that. They pass on the bad.
Yep.
And as much as you pass on the good.
Hurts my soul. Okay, what were you saying before the train rudely interrupted us?
Is the train still going?
I think it's fine. It's not that loud anymore. I'm hungry.
Can you go close that window, actually?
I also need to pee again. I'm so mad this interview got... I don't know where the hell we were. Where were we?
Shut up.
I'm talking. I want to finish...
I need to make markers.
I'm
Shut
sorry.
Up. Jesus. You can tell you don't have to fucking edit this yourself, eh? Bitch. Okay.
Over the hell. Bath salts.
So now I want to go back, and this is a perfect time for us to segue into the second part of what I was going to talk about, which is a drug. And this drug, unfortunately, for the purpose of the discussion, is still legal in many parts of Canada and the U.S., and the freaky thing about this drug, actually, is the way that it's both being talked about and not talked about. You may have heard of it as bath salts, but the reason that you know this as bath salts is because one of the earlier iterations of this drug was called Ivory Tower. Okay, actually, let me just double check that. Ivory Wave, excuse me. It's called Ivory Wave. And Ivory Wave, if you go to this website... It's in the links. If you go, it looks like it's just advertising regular bath salts. It like shitty oil of Olay style.
Huh.
You know? Where it's got a foot in there and it's like, oh, this is... But there's key elements on the site that you can tell that something is weird. Like, for instance, they describe their bath salt as stimulating, which is an odd thing to call it what you should normally be putting in your bath. Well, if... snorted, this has an effect similar to cocaine, meth, and Ritalin put together.
Ooh, that's not good.
It's a little bit crazy. Now, I was doing some research about this drug. I wanted to read some stories about its effect, because some people were saying this is the drug responsible for this weird behavior, like the man in Florida who was eating that face.
The guy's face.
Although there was no content of flesh in his stomach, so I
so
guess
he was
just
chewing on his
I
face.
Guess he was chewing on it or ripping it off. He was doing some crazy, is what he was doing, but I wouldn't declare him a cannibal.
I don't know if I should say this. I'm gonna say this.
Just say it.
Okay, so when I was watching the interviews and I was reading about this, and I was thinking like, oh, crazy. And then you see the footage of like the feet, like the dead guy's feet naked, and then like the other guy writhing beside him.
Okay.
And I was just like, oh, that's awful. He's lost 75% of his face. And then they showed a picture of what the victim looked like. And part of me kind of felt like maybe there's something we don't know about. Because the guy that whose face he chewed on, he looks sketchy. He looks really sketchy. Hmm. I don't know if it's just me, if my
sketchy.
Like...
sketchy.
Yeah, you should look him up. The victim, at least, I'm sure there's maybe good pictures of him and maybe they just picked the
weirdest...
He
looked like a troll, evil.
He looked like... a crazy man. He looked like they just pulled him out of an insane asylum. It just in this one picture I saw in the news. I'm sure there's lots of pictures of him where he looks normal. Maybe I don't know. So I try not to make too many judgments.
You're making a lot of judgments.
I know.
Here.
But when I saw that picture, my brain just immediately thought like, there's another story.
They were
here.
Both evil.
Not that they were both evil, but there was something else going
well,
on.
Well, they were probably together tripping some fucking balls, and. And if this one drug was involved, I wouldn't be surprised. Because look, there's a great Vice article that I've linked to from 2011 that barely got any traction. But this is about one of the guys from Vice magazine, which I love. And his whole experience essentially trying this bath salt thing out. So he ordered some because it is motherfucking legal. And then he tried some. So at first he's like, okay... The first dealio is that it feels like there are daggers in your throat when you snort it. Like it just goes in your throat and it just kind of cuts you up inside.
Like a good whiskey.
It feels really bad. And then what you get is super sweaty palms where his pants were wet from how sweaty his palms were. Yeah, well, it increases your heart rate like a motherfucker.
Ooh.
Yeah. All right. Well, next up, they were just describing the fact that they, I guess just because they were still on small doses, they were always on the edge of feeling like you had lost your mind. Now, the way that is described in the article is that on acid, the fear that you're losing your mind is sometimes present. But for the most part, acid has goofy little images to keep you entertained unless you have a dark mind or some kind of crazy thing that you just really don't want to deal with. But for the most part, it's kind of goofy. This has no goofiness. So if things get a little bit dark, which wouldn't be surprising if you did a lot more than just really tiny amounts, the fact that it makes you more aware, increasingly more aware, and, I mean, when they were doing it for one day, the guy says he was like, after he had stopped, he was up for 36 hours and he couldn't sleep, even after he was taking some fucking sleeping pills or whatever, anything to relax him, could not fall asleep, and he was doing a small amount. So I have to imagine that many of these people have been doing it and have been deprived of sleep for quite some time, when really bad hallucination combined with extreme heart rate and hired adrenaline and a shutdown of the frontal lobe will result in some pretty scary monkey-like behavior that maybe you're not too comfortable with. And when there's that story of one guy who's like, oh, he ate a guy's heart and part of his brain, his roommate's, when he just came home, he attacked him and he did that. That doesn't sound that dissimilar from what happens in some chimpanzee groups where, yeah, there was two male rivals, and they were in close proximity, and they were just fighting about something, and then it got crazy, and then he ate part of him, and that
so,
was just
okay, so there's up. This other thing in the media that they're talking a lot about how these cases they're trying to shove in these elements of, like, superhuman strength. They shot this guy, like, six times, and
oh, I forget about that part, yeah, the superhuman strength element, which is, all again, not uncommon for people who are on drugs like crystal meth, for instance. They can often have a significant degree of strength and a seeming imperviousness. One person has described it as slowly cooking on the inside, which is probably where that whole zombie thing comes from. And you know, though, this ivory wave thing got some traction in the news. Where some of the stories really started was from this one woman who was going to be a bride, and she decided that she was going to lose weight. So she took some of this, and she was losing weight like a motherfucker. Of course, she was also having, you know, extreme paranoia, delusions, all the bad shit that I was telling you. I mean, like, culminations of bad trip after bad trip that can probably drive someone insane. And violently insane, but in her case, she fell into a coma, and then they just had to unplug her eventually because she wasn't waking up. So that was one of the big news of the early bath salt things, but still not enough to get the shit banned. And I'm sure here's the thing. When I was reading about what are the effects when taken in small amounts, all right? And some of the people that were talking about it were like, well, it's very pleasant. It's like I said before, cocaine, meth, and Ritalin. And I'm sure that there's lots of people who love these drugs and love the idea of these drugs being combined. The problem is that, you know, when you look at a drug and say, well, how do you classify drugs that are harmful or not harmful? And I'm not talking about it being illegal, just in terms of how we recognize the drug's effect on us. Right? I think that part of what you have to look at is, what is its effect when you are really doing a lot of it? Right? What are the effects when someone does a lot of this? Violence. Violence is often a factor. And there's a significant amount of them that were, you know, get admitted to hospital because they are kind, you know, it is a bit of a poison. So what are you supposed to do now as a society? Like, because I don't believe in one in which you make things illegal. And still we're at the degree where this is not an epidemic. All right. The reason why it's not big news is because these are still isolated events. For the most part, people, you know, are fairly responsible with their drug use, even if something is legal and available. And that sometimes you can make it worse by making it illegal, which is what I think will happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
If it becomes illegal, you will witness a big problem, because this drug is now all the things that I talked about, and it's probably cheap as all motherfucking hell to make. Holy fucking shit, is it probably cheap. And now you might think to yourself, I can ban products that make it. you cannot stop chemists from making anything they want, and you could potentially create a black market revenue that's still significant. That could be the new Coke. So what the fuck do we do in this situation?
So, yeah, I don't know. I want to trust people. I want to create a society where we encourage people to be responsible for their own actions.
That's what I want, I think.
But, yeah, I don't know. I think that the nanny state thing, I'm not sure that's the best solution. Where people are like, well, if it's not illegal, it must be fine. I don't want people thinking that. I think that some things that are bad should not be illegal. Because I don't think that that should be the definition of what's bad. Oh, if it's illegal, then it's bad. If it's legal, then it's fine. That's not reasonable. That's just not reasonable.
What about its availability? And this is the big question. Because even in a place where we say this is not a nanny state, do I want this website advertising itself as a bath salt?
Yeah, that's very
concerning. And having to make no claims about their products. Not being forced to sort of say, these are the results of what you get.
But it's the Wild Wild West of the internet. I mean, what the fuck do you want?
I don't know. I really don't know.
What can we really do?
In most cases, scary. I think we face that same dilemma where I would love to say that the solution is education.
So, in the end,
is not the realistic answer.
Yeah. So in the end, drugs like bath salts are scary. They scare us.
Oh yeah, they're very scary.
People's belief that zombies and the reanimation of dead people into zombies is frustrating. Oh my god, so frustrating. Oh my god. And this show is tangenty. Conclusion. Trying to wrap it up.
Oh, wow. Well, I think you did a successful job. I think this is the first time that something gets wrapped up not by me. Although I suppose on issues of drug policy, I could speak endlessly, only because I don't even know the answer to it. And although I do know the answer to the zombie equation, stop making shitty zombie movies. I'm sick and tired of them. That's my solution. Just sick to death. It's time to move on.
I think
now you know what we should move to? I think we should move towards a fascination in the Frankenstein thing. Yeah, let's go Frankenstein rather than just the zombies thing.
I don't know. I think we still got some material out of the zombie franchises. Okay, so I found a picture of the guy.
Yeah,
the
I know.
Victim.
I'm looking at him. He just looks like a homeless man. That's all. What? I think you're racist because he has darker skin.
He does. He's a white guy, isn't he? A white guy.
I assumed
he was a white guy. I just think he looks crazy. I think he looks...
He just looks like a homeless guy.
To me, that doesn't read homeless. To me, that reads... Like, if I saw him on the street, I would be worried for my safety.
Well, I can't blame you.
My inside...
He's got rapist eyes, what you're saying?
He's got crazy eyes. He's got crazy eyes.
Well, he doesn't...
Oh, my God, they're so crazy. I need to shut this browser.
Maybe that's why that person attacked him. You know, if you suffer from paranoia and someone that looks crazy is around... You're probably going to go crazy.
As soon as I saw the picture of this guy who's the victim, I mean, my heart goes out to his family and his recovery. Nobody deserves to go through that kind of thing. I'm just saying, it made me think that maybe there's another layer to the story. Because he looks crazy.
But at the end of the day, there are no zombies. And such a thing is silly. I mean, it's one of the least believable of the myths. I could believe a form of lycanthropy... Only because there's some people that look like wolves, you know, with that have wolf faces. And there are some people that are sensitive to light and have, like, enlarged canines and need more iron. And that sounds kind of like vampirism.
There are two things we do have that are zombie-ish, apparently.
Yeah, what are they?
This drug, kind of zombie-like symptoms.
Sort of, I guess.
But still not fucking zombies. And two, necrotizing fasciitis, which is a flesh-eating disease, which most people die from even when treated. It's just eating your flesh slowly.
I guess those are the visuals.
Those are the visuals.
I would say, though, that I would say there was also poor medicine and poor diagnosis, as we agreed before the beginning of the show.
Yeah, sometimes you'd say people are dead and they're not dead. That still doesn't make them zombies. The only zombie we have is Zombie Jesus. That's it.
And he's going to forgive you for all your
sins. And he's going to forgive me for my sins.
Okay, well, you know, with that, I think we should wrap up a very tangenty show.
I'm so sorry, guys.
Thank you, Carissa, for filling in for, during our Atheist Appreciation Month, which
no
I guess
problem.
Is being stretched by one more month, because I definitely want to try to give as much shout out and love as we can to other people in the scene. Because
it's been a really fun month to just kind of talk to other people or listen to you talk to other people more so and kind of see what everybody's angle on the atheism scene is.
Yeah, well, there's lots of different approaches, as I said before.
And different opinions. I think a lot of people feel differently about our community. And it's interesting to see, you know, I've been asking myself, is that just because of, you know, that's how the scene is where they are? Or is that just their perception? Or is it that our scene is so weird that we are all things to all people? I don't know. It's been interesting to see that everybody's kind of got a different perspective.
And no one's got it figured out.
No one's got it figured out. That is definitely an ongoing theme.
Which is don't pretend that you do. If you do,
upsetting.
I'll bitch slap you. Okay, with that, my name is Jacob Forge.
And I'm Krista Hendricks.
Have a good Atheist Day, everybody.